Hello, 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 and welcome to the Velvet Studio. And we are, the GLBT talk show based here in the nation's capital of Ottawa. Very exciting. And there's always a lot of excitement going on. For the sake of our readers, oh my gosh. For the sake of our listeners, Sebastian now has his excited face on.
Yes, I am Sebastian.
And you are excited. Yes. My name is Luke Smith, and we will be joined by Joshua Mayo in just a few moments as we discuss this week's topic of... And I want to apologize to everyone that is suffering from the incurable Trump fatigue. I am dreadfully sorry, but we will be discussing... Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Well, not him. Not him. Exactly.
Yeah.
But rather, what has his election meant for GLBT people in the States?
Yes.
Which, by the way, is nothing good. Okay, job done. Move on.
Well, the good news is, if you have Trump fatigue, that he is actually a very, very, very small portion of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say he barely plays into it, but it's not really a Trump story.
Well, kind of, yes, no, maybe. But we'll get into that.
But mostly no.
But maybe, I'd say mostly yes. Well, whatever. Agree to disagree. Either way, it's all good. So yes, we are talking about the impact of the U.S. election. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
On GLBT rights in the U.S.,
the United
Canada,
States. Yep.
And the whole of the world.
Yep.
We might not get into everywhere around the world in under 60 minutes, but we will give it
Sorry,
a darn
Chile.
Good... Chile.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Eritrea, actually, but you went with like Chile, which
yeah.
has like one of the best names of a country
yeah.
ever. Chile. It just sounds so relaxed.
And we definitely ain't got no time for Namibia.
Namibia, I'm sorry, Namibia, but actually, no, we do have time for Namibia, and I've got a bone to pick with the African delegations at the UN.
That's a weird segue. This is one of those times where you had a weird segue that actually works,
yeah.
by the way. Just
no,
so you know.
I do. I have a bone to pick with the African delegations at the UN. And it does relate, and I really wish that Joshua was here, but he's still on his way. It does relate to the effect of the US election. So I don't know if you knew this, but the UN managed to get themselves a special... And it's not a special rapporteur, but essentially a commissioner for GLBT issues.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's only job is to look at LGBT rights, so lesbian, gay, bi, trans rights across the world. Where are people, you know, being beaten up and imprisoned? Where do they have the death sentence?
Mm-hmm. And being the UN, they tend to take both sides. So, like, you know, it's not super great to be LGBT in Uganda, but what are the hopeful points in it? Although... Canada and the Netherlands are considered to be like the great, you know, Shangri-Las of being gay. What are the places that we have to work on? So the UN tends to be as balanced as possible. Now, granted, sometimes they have to nitpick. So when you're looking at GLB rights, T is a completely different issue. But when you're looking at GLB rights in Canada and the Netherlands,
gay, lesbian, bi, yeah.
The UN, basically, they really do nitpick for places for us to improve. Trans rights across the globe has a long way to go, but if you're just looking at GLB, the UN has, like, when they critique Canada for that stuff, you're looking at it going, seriously? Like, really? But it's because it's their job, and, you know, the big issues have been taken care of, and really it's about T, and it's also about non-Western identity, so two-spirited, and... Wait, Inuit tribes have something other than Two-Spirit. They have another name for it, I think, but I can't remember.
Well, we can't sum up 100 different tribes into
yeah.
one word.
Indigenous, non-Western
yeah.
queer identities. There you go. That,
I was
that's
talking
another
to,
thing that we have to work
indigenous
on.
Folks about that, and they said, well, you know, there's white people want to have words for things.
Yeah.
So this is a white person word to capture... all of these things that
yeah.
we don't have. We just, it's just, there's not enough time
yeah.
to explain to white people what all of these things mean.
Yeah.
And I get that. So as white people, we have simplified
yeah.
all diverse sexualities of First Nations people into
well,
one.
And it's really interesting when you get into that with people who've actually done some reading about this sort of thing, because like technically the Norse, like Bronze Age Norway, had three genders. But it was male, female, and there was another one that was another kind of a male.
Oh, interesting.
They had like two male genders, and the other male was for basically the you would translate it as bards, but if you know your Norse mythology, it was skalda. So they would braid their beards like the warriors, but they would wear women's clothing, and then they would participate in male and female life, but they were addressed using male pronouns, but they weren't considered to be men like how other men were. They were sort of another kind of a man. And so, anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. What were we here to talk about?
I was wondering when you were going to get to the conclusion so that we could bring it back to the
UN. I would
say
about most of what we're going to be talking about is Mike Pence. And
I don't even want to talk. I want to finish this point. Let me finish this
point. Oh, right, the afternoon.
So everyone complained recently that Saudi Arabia, if you're not familiar with Saudi Arabia, they have been bombing Yemen. Just to give you some context. Mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia, I think it was Saudi Arabia. No, I might be wrong with that. No, it wasn't Yemen. No. I will Google that and make sure I'm thinking of the right thing. But I know that somebody has been bombing Yemen. I think it's Saudi Arabia.
I'm going to Google that right now.
You're going to Google it? Yeah. Anyway. If that's not true, phone us and we'll be happy to correct it. But they've now been made the chair of the Human Rights Council. And some folks might be thinking, Saudi Arabia? All those things, I hear about them. Yeah, no, they've been made the chair of the Human Rights Council mainly because every country that doesn't agree with the West or certain human rights tend to lump together and they push through to have Saudi Arabia on the Human Rights Committee and so on and so forth. Anyway, 47 people passed at the UN Council the having a special rapporteur. I don't know if I butchered that. He is a special rapporteur. There we go. Oh, no, the word isn't on here.
Yeah, no, it really isn't.
But it's the fancy word that the UN uses for people who have to investigate things.
Okay.
Yeah, very fancy. Anyway, they appointed him. I mean, Saudi Arabia and some other Muslim countries, tried desperately to block it. There was 18 against, 26 and 23 in favor, and 6 abstentions. And that's a pretty heavy opposition. But now, so it passed. And this guy, Vitit Montarpon, who is a law professor at a university in Bangkok, Thailand, is now this special rapporteur.
Okay.
That was until recently. It seems like what's now going to happen is that the African coalition at the UN is going to essentially try and defund the position and overrule this UN Human Rights Council decision. And essentially say, 1 minute, we've got a special rapporteur, next minute, not so much.
Yeah.
So I have a bone to pick with the African delegations at the UN who are trying every trick they can find. And the reason why this is important, because under Obama and under certain other Western leaderships, there would be strong opposition to this, because the role of the rapporteur is to identify human rights abuses in large scales. Mm-hmm. They have a special rapporteur on the child rights, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So usually there's a strong opposition to this from the West. But it's very discouraging with Trump now as the president. We don't know what will happen. We don't know who will come forward. We don't know what's going to go on.
The thing. Historically, the president of the United States has largely stayed out of the UN and has left it in the hands of a competent foreign secretary.
Well, there's a UN ambassador. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the names but floated as
the
UN
other
ambassador.
Thing to bear in mind is that the foreign secretary being proposed right now will be Newt Gingrich, who doesn't like it when people speak things that are not English.
Ooh.
He's going to be their foreign secretary. Yeah,
that's awkward. And yeah, then, but mind you, in the UK, we've got Boris Johnson, and I don't think he can speak English. So that's they should get along fine.
Actually, yeah, this morning I read an article about Boris Johnson and how he's ruining things to the point where even his own party is saying you need to get him out of any position of authority whatsoever.
Yeah. My favorite one is he keeps telling people what will happen after Brexit, and anyone with any kind of law degree or information or read a book is like, no, that's not how that works.
That's not how that works, or that's not possible.
He's literally mis-selling goods, which is interesting because the British police are investigating the false advertising, essentially. It's the electoral false promises around the idea that $350 million will go from the EU to funding healthcare. It was misleading electoral trick.
Yeah.
Boris Johnson has tried to say that wasn't him, although it was written on the side of a bus.
Yeah.
that he drove around all of Britain in.
Yeah.
So he might struggle. So let's just say this particular gentleman has been stretching the truth. And when I say truth, I mean post-truth.
Yeah.
Well, it's not truth. It's just stuff he made up.
Now, this actually is relevant because there's similar things happening in the States right now. Some promises were made that they're already starting to back off on them. So one of the things that has sort of come up is as Trump and his team, most of whom have never actually held federal level seats.
Except, so what is it? Carson was being floated as, I think, the environment minister or something. And then he announced that he won't take the appointment because he has no government experience.
Yes.
Which is hilarious because this man ran for president.
Okay.
It's like, what are you, were you going to get to the Oval Office and go, gosh darn it, I didn't think this through?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what's happening right now with Trump.
Yeah,
where he's, well, one of the things he's known for having a very short attention span, and the one of the reasons why he's all over the map with the whiskey and the steaks and the hotels and the golf courses is because he can only do anything for half an hour to 45 minutes at a time. And now that he's learning about how much reading and how much sitting still and how many meetings, long meetings, he has to do as the president, it's a lot of people are saying that they wouldn't be surprised if he'll quit, which is actually the worst case scenario, because that would make Mike Pence.
And we'll be talking about Mike Pence just after Martha Wainwright takes the reins in off her album Goodnight City. And we'll be joined by Joshua Mayo just after this as well. Thank you very much.
Swim, you're halfway to drown. I see how.
Hello and welcome back. Sorry about that. We seem to have an ad just randomly cut short. Mm. But that happens. Anyway, welcome back. And this is the Velvet Studio. And we have in the room myself, Luke Smith. Am I the only one in the room?
You are the only one in the room. Yes, I'm a good host.
I see what you did there. Yeah. I see what you did. And we're joined by...
Joshua Mayo.
I do know your name. I just wanted you to introduce yourself.
Thank you. You're so kind.
Yeah. also reminded me to turn your mic on. So, you know, these things happen. Now, I was just kind of mini-ranting during the song break there. And I say mini... But Sebastian's already falling asleep right in front of me. But it was a mini-rant.
No, I'm paying attention. I'm just used to it by now.
Because I discovered today... that the Oxford Dictionary's Word of the Year, and bearing in mind, for example, in 2012 with the British election, the Word of the Year was omnishambles. When so many things went wrong, it was just a mess. And omnishambles became the word. Oxford English Dictionary Word of the Year is post-truth. Mm-hmm. Let me just break that down for you, what post-truth means.
I think it was
means.
5 years ago that truthiness was the word of the year.
What is truthiness?
Truthiness is something that feels like it probably is true, and if you looked it up, it might be true, but the person who spoke it doesn't necessarily know if it's true or not.
Oh, okay.
So it's an adjective. It's sort of truthy, but...
Yeah, it feels true, and if it does turn out to be true, it actually is something they just sort of stumbled on the truth by accident, by guessing. Hmm. Stephen Colbert used the word truthiness to describe the entire Bush Jr. 8 years, basically. Mm. It was a whole bunch of truthiness and the truthiness of reporting. And there's also a philosopher who did a treatise on the nature of bullshit. And I'm not even joking. It was epistemology. And he said, okay, so there's about 3,000 years of philosophers asking questions about what is true and what is false. But then he asked, what is bullshit? Because bullshit could be true and false.
And if anyone's offended by the word bullshit, we do apologize.
It's now considered an academic word, though.
Because of this paper. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sure the Canadian Broadcasting Standards Authority will be pleased to learn.
Look it up. It's a very short essay. It's very accessible. You do not need 4 years of philosophy under your belt to read it. And it's a little bit funny.
So back to post-truth. Now, post-truth essentially says that there are facts. There are things that we know.
Yeah.
But let's just ignore those and just say stuff. Without any facts. Facts are irrelevant. Why do we need to think? Why do we need to say things that actually are the way they are?
Yeah.
The ice caps are melting. Well, let's just ignore that as a fact. Mm. And I'm just going to say the ice caps maybe are not melting. And that is post-truth.
I feel like maybe they're not.
It's my about emotions. Making statements that maybe... And earlier we were joking about Boris Johnson saying that $350 million will go from the EU to healthcare. Well, that was just completely made up. Yeah. Like, nobody... Like, that's not... That won't happen. Mm-hmm. It's not how that works. But he said it with enough conviction. And I think that pretty much sums up the entire Trump campaign. Mm-hmm. Is you say it with enough conviction, doesn't even matter what it is.
Yeah.
Vauxhall car. Not Vauxhall. Was it Vauxhall? The ones that cheated the emissions test?
Oh, you know, I'm not sure.
Yeah, actually. Anyway, one of those. Yeah. German car industry, company, you know... Our cars are the greenest ever, you know, maybe, who knows?
Well, you'd think Tesla, which, you know, runs on electricity.
Well, it was a diesel emissions scandal.
Got it.
I think it was Volkswagen.
So what do you think is at the source of this sort of post-truth society? Is it the inability of people to research or listen? Or
I mean, it's also, I don't know, it's because we're a millennial, because it's a digital age. Facebook recently announced that in the last 2 weeks of the campaign, fake news sites... Which is, I'm using air quotations here, news sites, mm-hmm. where they just make stuff up.
Yeah.
They make stuff up. Sarah Palin has 10 illegitimate daughters in Nambia. You know, you say it with enough conviction, and they'll say it's true. And they were getting more clicks and posts and shares on Facebook than actual news stories.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is just terrifying that a spotty teenager in Crimea can... cobble together a news story, make it up with no research, no facts, because of course we're post-fact now.
Yeah.
And that was what was being the, like, 40% of adults use Facebook, and most of the news isn't even real.
Well, if you want to go down that road, then you could also be talking about how education has been slowly defunded over the past 10 to 20 years.
Well, that's going to change under Trump.
Critical thinking has been sliding a little bit, and also taking things as fact. You know, the textbook says yes, and therefore that's how it is. Mm-hmm. It has sort of shot up as an attitude. And if you ask, like, a college or university professor who's been around for 20 years or more about the students who've come through over the years, they say, a lot of them will say, you know, it goes up and down over time. There's just this natural cycle. You'll get really good kids for a while, and then you'll get not so good kids for a while, and then it'll go back to being really good kids for a while. And they say that the cycle kind of froze in its tracks of being a good mix of obviously good and obviously not so great for about a 10-year period in Ontario. And if you're wondering, 10 years, that's really weird. 10 years is also the duration of the Grade 13 program. So Grade 13 actually leveled off a lot of that. But now, anyway, it's been this sort of steady decline in quality where professors are having to make their tests easier so that they don't have to fail three-quarters of the class. And a lot of that is, and if you speak to these professors, they will say there's the exact same number of really good students per class. It's just that classes are four times larger, so they're a smaller proportion of the whole. So it's not that kids are getting dumber, it's just that universities are swelling in size. So that's a different issue. But when they're seeing the kinds of people who normally would not have been accepted into university about 20 years ago, a lot of it is a lack of critical thinking. A lot of it is I had this huge conversation yesterday with a TA who's in the biology department about students who complain that they got a C on their thing. And they're like, I didn't get it. And they're like, and he basically just says, did you read the pre-lab? Did you read the backgrounder? And did you read the textbook? And the answer is no, but I still want an A. And this is a metaphor.
Yeah.
For
a sense of entitlement. Almost.
For the past 4 years, for like Brexit, the number of people who did not look up the relationship between the
don't even get me started on that.
Like the whole fact that like Blackpool for about 15 years was a toxic waste dump. You could not go swimming on that beach. Now it is again one of the jewels of Britain because the EU helped fund cleaning up the beach.
Or Merthyr Tydfil, where they are the highest funded, subsidized part of the whole of the UK, voted to leave.
Yeah.
Because nobody Googles.
Yeah. And it's kind of like talking about Brexit to discuss
Trump.
The US election might seem a bit indirect, but the thing is that Brexit happened long enough ago that we can see the fallout a little bit more, and there's more people, there's been more time to sort of analyze the situation. So Trump is just so recent, and people are still trying to figure out, like a whole bunch of people are saying, you know, the Democratic Party may have underestimated the number of misogynist women, and they were just assuming they would get 50% of the vote. All they needed to do, but 50% of the 20% who actually bothered to show up.
Yeah, 40% of people didn't vote. What is that about? I mean, it's incredulous to us because we had a linchpin election here in Canada.
Yeah.
We
still have moderately low turnout on the international level.
But it was record breaking.
Yeah.
A lot has happened, and a lot of people got out, and a lot of people actually voted. And I think it was big voter turnout. Usually swings Liberal. It's weird that Liberals don't vote. But then if you think of the demographic who are Republican and who are Conservative, they are predominantly white men, and white men go and vote.
And old people.
Older white men, particularly.
Well,
it's like their thing to do of the day.
Yeah.
What shall I do? Golf or vote?
Well, retirees are the most likely to vote in the States because, and this is something that's coming up a lot, it happens on a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday, right.
It's not a national holiday. You do not get in lieu hours if you take the day off to go vote.
In Canada, you do.
You can, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also in Canada, like, during the, not the recent, like the Trudeau federal election, the federal election before that, I had moved too recently, and so I wasn't registered in the ward that I lived in, and I had troubles finding my ID. But I went to vote anyway. And with no registration card and crappy ID, which was an out-of-date passport, I still got from when I got to the building to when I was in the voter booth in under an hour. Now, if you show up at an electoral site in the States and you have your voter registration card, you have two pieces of good ID, it can still take 3 to 5 hours. Unless you get there at 7 in the morning. at which point it'll only take half an hour.
Sounds like walk-in clinic waiting times.
It is, basically. And so the system is very much broken, and the only people who can afford to take the time to do that are self-employed people, wealthy people, retirees. You're not going to get a lot of working poor who can do that, unless they're seasonal or shift workers, at which point they have no problems. But then they basically have to sacrifice a night of sleep just to go and vote. So, I mean, it's a really complicated issue.
Yeah.
And so because of how everything is set up...
I want to swing the conversation back to some of the immediate impacts. So people are thinking, Trump's in, the conversation's kind of moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Are we in a post-Trump talking point? No. The point that I want to really bring to is, according to the Southern Poverty Center, there have been 437 hate crimes since November the 8th to November the 14th.
Oh, my God.
Which is a massive spike. Yes. Massive spike. And you hear about them. And we've been, for this show, we've been kind of tracking some of them.
There's been a few here in Ottawa.
In Denver, there was a woman who is trans, who had, you know, die tranny, on her car and, you know... Some woman had her 4-year-old daughter who was a black woman. Her 4-year-old daughter was told by some boy in the class that now Trump's elected, we can kill all the black people. And you think, wow, that's crazy, but it's a 4-year-old. Whereas in California, a 71-year-old gay man was beaten, pulled out of his car, and told, because Trump's now president, we can kill all the homos.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's happening all over the country,
mm-hmm.
In the States. People thinking, I saw a video clip this morning of a Starbucks, and I'm thinking, that's like a gay person's place of worship is a Starbucks. Like, that's where we go. They are our people. So in this Starbucks, some random old white man was accusing the barista of anti-white racism because the coffee took so long, and called her trash and said he would report it to the police because of anti-white racism. And I'm like, I don't know how that would work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it is mm-hmm. insane. There's been 27 trans suicides attributed to Trump's election already as well.
I just read an article saying that there was a spike in Trump-themed Craigslist
listings. Funny. They are funny.
On the mail for mail sites. So it's something like, I just want someone to come over and cuddle in the post-Trump era, or I want to have as much sex as possible before it's illegal again. And it's just like really strange that, you know, Trump is affecting how people are cruising for anonymous sex. But, you know, it's the impact is...
Yeah, it's weird, really, and quite frightening.
Profound, and it goes all over the place. Yeah.
But people aren't particularly worried necessarily about Trump. They're worried about Pence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Joshua, why should people...
Well, and also the fact that they have the House, the Senate, the office.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
So why are people worried about Mike Pence?
Well, he has demonstrated policy history of... a lot of policies that were really homophobic. And a few of the ones I managed to find were, supporting a constitutional amendment to ban marriage equality. So he signed a bill to jail same-sex couples applying for marriage licenses in Indiana. I think one of the more egregious ones would be the wanting to divert HIV prevention funding to conversion therapy.
Oh,
right.
Oh
my God. Which I think was, at least in the days after the election, was the biggest sort of thing I'd seen about Pence.
Madness. Yeah. But it's not just Pence. It's so many people
again,
who have used anti-gay rhetoric.
Someone who does not know how to use Google to find out that most of the HIV, people living with HIV in the States are not gay men.
It depends on where you are.
Yeah.
I mean, and it kind of ignores the issue. And I think what Mike Pence has demonstrated amongst many of his other colleagues probably in Trump cabinet is that they simply do not understand the issue. You know, in I think in Saskatchewan, the highest rate of HIV infection is intravenous. Mm-hmm. So drug sharing and needle sharing is a huge issue there. In Ontario, over half of them are men having sex with men. But I think in one of the eastern provinces, it's heterosexual couples mm-hmm. That are passing it. So it really depends on where you are in the local demographic. And that's just Canada.
Yeah.
There is such a diversity in the states that, you know, to defer to conversion therapy, which has been classified as psychological torture. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's been decried by the UN. It's mm-hmm. been, it's, you know, I think the American Psychologists Association has called it, well, essentially a waste of time. It doesn't do anything. Yeah. Why would you inflict somebody, you know, to cure them of their homosexuality when it's not actually... It's not a curable disease. I don't know if Trump mm-hmm. got that memo from the 80s, but it's not actually...
It's actually really curable. Weird because interviews with Trump, he's like, I don't know, I don't care, whatever, it's cool. They're cool by me. Yeah. I don't know, they're not bothering me. That's all right. And it's his attitude is, whatever, which is actually just as destructive as being destructive, considering all the people mm-hmm. beneath him. But he himself seems to be kind of ambivalent, like, whatever, you know, it's their business.
He's been on record as being pro-gay and anti-gay.
Right, yeah.
Pro-women's rights and anti-women's rights.
Yeah.
You know, pick an issue, and there is some evidence that he has been both for and against said issue.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why everyone in the gay community is freaking out about who he puts in power, like in his cabinet. Because they are the ones that will do most of the heavy lifting.
Now, this actually leads to an interesting discussion on, I believe they're calling them sanctuary cities.
Yes,
and
which
sanctuary
is,
states.
Which is, for folks not familiar, it is where refugees and illegal immigrants won't be hunted down and deported.
Well, it's also, there a lot of the legal rights that are going to be removed on the federal level, they're going to enshrine them into municipal law. Mm-hmm. That as far as the, it's weird to think of New York City as a municipality, but it totally is. The municipality of, I think it's New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, San Francisco, and Boston, I think,
mm-hmm.
have all declared themselves sanctuary cities so that if you move there... And you are an openly gay couple. Your marriage certificate will be respected. You know, your retirement rights and your all the visitation rights in the hospital, all that sort of all the rights that have been enshrined over the past 4 years will be respected. But it'll be under municipal law, and they will supersede federal law.
Well, they can in some, but they can't in others, and that's what the worry is.
They're also going to ignore the areas where you can't because. That's what they've declared. Also, you have the Cascadia. Have you heard about the Cascadia? Cascadia is something that's been bandied about for about 40 years now, but now people are taking it seriously. So the Cascades are a mountain range that are part of the Rocky Mountains on the West Coast. And all of the states that overlap with the Cascades, so Oregon, Washington State... California, Nevada, and one more, which I can't remember. I think it's like Wyoming, or it's one of the ones that's square, like Wyoming or Iowa or Ohio or something. Anyway, they are contemplating snapping off and forming their own country.
I've also heard rumors that a whole bunch of the West Coast is going to like join Canada, which will never happen.
Well, I mean, Cascadia has been talking about breaking off for quite some time. Also, bear in mind, this is one of my favorite things about telling... Spanish-speaking people and Mexicans to, quote-unquote, go back home. Texas was originally a Mexican territory that was annexed during the American-Spanish War. Spanish-American?
That sounds about right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Spanish War, America, look it up. Google will fix it. The southwestern states were originally a part of the Spanish colonies that were annexed by the states. So strictly speaking... Like, a lot of the... You can be a 10th generation person of Latino descent, I don't know if you call it Latin American descent if you're looking at 10 generations back, because I don't think the Latin American identity was formed yet. Yeah, no, it would be...
That seems kind of far back, yeah.
I know, but you know what I'm saying. Like,
right.
You could be a 10th generation Spanish American, there you go, and live in Texas, New Mexico, or Nevada. And, you know, this whole thing about... taking them and shipping them back home, well, you know, that would be Spain. And you'd be having to look at church records from 400 years ago to prove that that's where they, quote-unquote, belong. And this is this really weird thing where, again, these are people who don't have the Google.
It's also the assumption that Spain will take them back.
Yeah.
If you're trying to deport I mean, you know, the politics in Spain and the politics in the States are not the same.
Spain and Portugal, though, they're slowly turning into sort of left-leaning hippie countries. So they might take them back. They might treat them as refugees just to, like...
That would be hilarious.
Stick
that
it,
would be hilarious.
Know,
yeah.
Actually, from what I remember, at least in the Philippines, just a few years ago, I was reading about... I might be wrong in this, but I was reading about how if you were born before a certain time with Spanish name or something in the Philippines, you could be eligible for...
You want to go back to Spain?
I think so. But cool. I might be wrong.
We'll be going to Spain, not going back to Spain.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, because that is also evident. Yeah. So we are actually going to be talking a bit more about the cabinet and perhaps some global considerations of what this means just after A Great Big World and Won't Stop Running. Now, I chose this because this is a song all about kind of empowerment and just good feelings and because we're talking about some really sad stuff, you know, hate crimes, trans suicide, very depressing. So this song will hopefully maybe cheer folks up a little bit. We kind of worked to find one that would do that. So anyway, this is A Great Big World and Won't Stop Running.
Facing forward, lights out, I won't stop running. Sunrise, another hand to hold tight. This isn't over.
I am way too young and I won't stop. I don't know how much longer I can fake it, that it's all right, that I can do this alone, and I know that life is what you make it, but it's hard to see stars when you're always caught in the folds. Every night in my mind it's a fight, but I won't stop dreaming, 'cause this isn't over, it's never over. I'd rather be the one that starts the fire than to shut my mouth and be the one who gets burned. Yeah, it is what it is, but I wanna go higher, 'cause I failed it once before. I believe the tables will turn. I wanna love and be the one who is loved. No, I won't stop dreaming, 'cause this isn't over, it's never over. I am way too young and I won't stop running. I
I am way too young and I won't stop running.
Hello and welcome back. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
I'm Joshua.
And we are discussing the impact of the U.S. election.
Before we get to that,
oh dear.
I just wanted to throw something out there. I've been enjoying playing a game lately, which is who is Trump like but not Hitler? And sort of looking at other major historical figures, or literary figures actually, that you could compare Trump to, that actually has an apt comparison. Mm. So my two favorites so far is Louis the 15th, the last Louis before the French Revolution.
Was he the one that got his head chopped off?
Yeah, it was the one that, okay. Also, French fries were designed to celebrate the beheading of Louis the 15th. You can look it up.
Oh.
He was just sort of like dopey and incompetent and just wanted to have a good time. And he just trusted his cabinet to
Wasn't
take care of
him.
Wasn't
he the one married to Marie Antoinette?
Yes, he was. Yes.
Yeah.
And also it's because of Louis the 15th that we have salt and pepper at every table. That's another thing that you should look up. It's complicated. But the other favorite one that I really like is, comparing Trump to Zaphod Beeblebrox. Now, if you're not familiar with the,
Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Zaphod Beeblebrox from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series.
Oh, I knew I recognized the name.
Something that Douglas Adams stressed a great deal was that anyone who had the ability to become elected was probably not a suitable person to actually hold the office.
Mm.
Because in the end, elections are just popularity contests.
Yeah.
And again, you know, if you want to make these little comparisons, the idea of him, you know, getting into office, realizing it's boring, stealing technology, and then just going on the lam, I wouldn't necessarily alarm me.
I was reading a satire article, and I didn't realize it was satire until near the end. And it was after meeting with Obama, Donald Trump realizes Obamacare is actually a good idea, and it's just like quotes of him going like, well, I never had time, I was so busy. And then I googled it and I was like, wow, actually that's what it does. I'm like, that does sound like something Trump would say. And no, it was a satire piece that he never googled what it does,
but
I couldn't tell.
He actually has said that he's going to leave a lot of it intact now that he understands what it is and what it does.
So many white people who are prejudiced have been crying in their sleep and having little hissy fits because he won't crack open again the marriage debate.
Yeah.
And they are just so gosh darn upset.
Yeah.
And essentially, I think he's turned around and said, I think he was against gay marriage, but now, like, he's not even in office yet. And he goes, well, they've already dealt with it.
Yeah.
I think he's realized how many things are on his plate, and the idea of just adding more stuff is maybe not the best idea. But no, I mean, that's one good thing. He won't crack open marriage. But he will be appointing the next Supreme Court judge, which is where we are particularly frightened.
So he's willing to put someone in power who might make homosexual intercourse illegal again.
No.
But you can still get married to somebody of the same gender.
So the person he wants to put in power in 2000 was arguing that that there should be laws available for that. But I hope that their position has changed on it, but we can see. I think Chris Christie was up for possibly becoming the Attorney General. Not to lose track of Chris Christie being the same one who caused massive traffic delays with closing a bridge in, I want to say, Boston. Is that where he is?
I think so.
Somewhere around there.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Because Boston has the big dig. Their big thing was an underpass. It's one of the first.
When he closed.
It's a highway that goes under the entire city.
And it caused a backlog for a long time. It was a huge deal. It kicked him out of the running for president. And now he might be Attorney General. Even though it's been
that is one of the few things, because I've been trying to be like, okay, let's pretend this is not all horrible. Let's try to find one or two good things about Trump getting into office, just because I like the idea of not crying myself to sleep every night. And his dedication to restoring infrastructure is actually pretty, pretty solid. He really believes in roads and bridges. Now, as a business person, that's actually it's very poignant, because business people make more money when infrastructure is good. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense, but it wasn't just a talking point for him. He really actually does believe in repairing roads, bridges, and tunnels in the United States, which is, you know, it's not sexy, but you look at that and you think, okay, here's something. Here's something that does not make me weep.
Yeah. Now, one thing that would make you weep is they were discussing his proposed Muslim registry.
Oh, yes.
And somebody, the spokesperson from one of his biggest support packs, was on the Megyn Kelly show essentially being like, you know what, this isn't such a bad idea. You know, it's important that we have this. And she's like, well, what if, let's say, worst case scenario, 10 years down the road, they use it, you know, much like how Hitler has used said similar lists.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, you know, it's not like we've never done it before. Just think of, like, when we, you know, with the Japanese and the internment camps and actually used Japanese internment and the JFK as precedent for creating a new registry of Muslims.
For why it's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is an awful thing and has massively tied at the fabric of not only American culture, but Canadian culture as well.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing is if you look at domestic terrorism in the States, a lot of it is done by Catholics. So they should probably also do a Catholic registry, you know, just to keep all those dirty, violent Catholics under check. It's ridiculous. And then if you're not under the Muslim registry or Catholic registry, they'll just assume you're Protestant and are therefore okay.
Are we so far removed from all these horrible incidents that, you know, we don't, that at least our politicians and our leaders don't understand their significance?
You know? I thought you were bringing it back to Canada. I was like, great Canadian segue. Amazing. Yeah. I don't know. If that's what really frightens me is that, and that's what frightens a lot of people, is that you can be doing your grocery shopping in Denver and you'll get beaten down to the ground because you're a lesbian. Mm-hmm. You know, you could be driving home from work and you could be beaten down to the ground because you have a gay marriage sticker in your bumper. Mm-hmm. These are things that have happened.
Yep.
And that is what is very frightening. But Canada is not isolated from that. Trump's victory has emboldened racism across the world. Here where we are recording in Ottawa, we've had anti-Semitic graffiti popping up. We had the anti-gay shirts pop up a couple of weeks ago or last month.
Yeah.
And then there's been incidents in Toronto, incidents in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. You know, it's coming up. We have a politician who wants to screen for values. Like, was she reading from Trump's prayer book? Like, what kind of madness is this?
Also, we are the country that did try to introduce Religious Barbarics Acts hotline.
Yeah, which I think is hilarious.
And that, I think that actually did get funded for a brief period.
Well, yeah, then, no, we don't talk about it. Sorry, you were going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, his victory is also not just emboldened, but legitimized a lot of the other right movements in across the world as well. So, off the top of my head, Marie Le Pen in France.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. She was arguing that her, Trump, and Putin should get together and, you know, sketch out a world, cooperation. That's what, that's what they wanted to sketch out. But, I mean, just how ridiculous is it? I mean, I really hope... I mean, Hillary Clinton recently said that, you know, don't lose faith in America. Mm-hmm. But it is really frightening when, you know, the basket of deplorables, I think they were called, now feel that they can threaten the lives of women, people of color, and LGBT folks.
Now, that said, the Canadian political system has been trying to get ahead of this. So there have been a few, because they're still looking for new leadership for the Conservative Party, and there were a couple people who were starting to use Trump-like rhetoric, but then members within the party got ahead of that and are trying to sort of squish it down. So LGBT Tory does not have a very good reputation in the queer community, but they do actually, they're very interested in keeping their party from sounding too crazy. And then you have like the old East-West divide, and a lot of the sort of East Coast-style conservatives, the ones who are like fiscally conservative but not socially conservative, are really trying to say that they don't want their party to go in that direction. Mm. Now, that said, they were sort of forcefully absorbed into it a few years ago when the PCs and the Reform Party were merged. But actually, one of the things I'm looking forward to is that if we do get the election reform that has been proposed, bandied about, like the Australia-type style, the Conservative Party could never survive unified. Well, they would be better if they split again.
That's one of the biggest complaints, I think, now against the current Liberal government, is that they are going excruciatingly slow on electoral reform. Suddenly it's not a big deal now that they've won an election.
So I actually, I'm a friendly guy, and I know people, and I chat with people, and I meet people at house parties. And I've actually met people who are on the committee that is researching electoral reform. And also, actually, I know a few people who are on the committee that's researching the marijuana law reform. Mm. But anyway, something that they're all saying across the board is that Trudeau is actually taking a scholarly approach to this. He wants it to be done the right way, first time, or as close to the right way as possible. He doesn't want it to be something that can be reversed. So a lot of Harper's laws were overturned within a month because he rammed them through the wrong way. Trudeau wants them to go through in a way that they cannot be easily overturned. And so that's why he's taking his time. And the big prediction that a lot of the policy writers are making is that in the third year of his term, when they're starting to boot up the election cycle again, that's when he's going to drop it all. Partly in order to get reelected, partly because it takes a while to research this sort of thing, to research best options. And so, I mean, at this point in time, this is defending him, but to sort of go the opposite direction, he's not really doing a very good PR job of expressing this. Mm. Like, I had to speak to people on these teams who I just met at house parties, and now you get the news from me, but I mean, that still leaves how many million Canadians?
Because now, as a listener, you know a guy that knows a guy, which isn't really how government policy should be formed.
Yeah, no. not stuff like this, you should have good communications with the public. We're working on it, guys. We really are, by the way.
Yeah. Now, the government has made moves to kind of tackle... And I don't know if the Liberal government is doing a good job, or it looks like it's doing a good job because we're comparing it to Trump. They announced Randy Bosino, MP of Edmonton Centre, I think, or Edmonton West, is now the special advisor on LGBT2I, or I2OQ2I, something along those lines, to the Liberal government. And everyone's like, wow, this is amazing. But then you look at the NDP, and they've had an LGBT critic for many years. Yeah. You look at, you know, they're like, well, are they just catching up to the NDP, or are they making a stance, you know, against, you know, the Trump rhetoric coming across the border?
Yeah.
It's really hard to kind of hold the Liberals to a Canadian bar when the American bar is so gosh damn low.
Yeah. And normally what we would do is, if the American bar just is dumb, we're like, okay, well, we'll just look at Britain instead. And that doesn't work either.
No, because of Boris Johnson. And on behalf of Brits, we'd like to apologize to Boris Johnson.
We're starting to look at Iceland and the Netherlands now. We are that desperate.
You know what? Obama flew to Germany, and everyone's like, we're pretty sure that Angela Merkel is now the last hope for Western liberalism, which is quite worrying.
Yeah.
Angela Merkel, nice lady, but the fact that she's now the last hope is sad. Also, she's amazing because she opened the doors to hundreds of thousands of refugees. Her legacy is going to be phenomenal.
The I cannot remember. It's a Gaelic word, but the leader of Scotland, the Chulainn, I think.
Ochai.
The Ochain of Scotland.
No, I was just going Ochai.
Oh, Ochai, okay. but it's not a prime minister. It's a title that is like a uniquely Gaelic name. But anyway, she is also amazing. But unfortunately, it's Scotland, so there's...
Anyway, that is all we have time for today, and we are playing out with a song by Willow Smith, with her famous gender non-conforming brother, is called November the 9th. She wrote it about the election, and check it out, and we'll see you all next week. Oh, we'll talk to you next week, I suppose, because you can't see us.
On the radio, yeah.